It's Matthew 11:12, taking the kingdom of God by force. He says, that is why you have got to take the shield of faith, and that is the big shield of faith over all. It is always militant. How is it militant? Because of these fiery darts, these wiles of the devil. Then Jeremiah believes God and acts according to his faith. His faith is resolved into obedience, and his obedience is a business-like obedience, not a slack, slothful obedience, but as we have pointed out, a very thorough transaction. That is the obedience of faith for which the Lord looks. And that is exactly what I did. I spent $55,000 in a situation that was absolutely impossible for me to get to New Zealand. It is 7:53 in the morning on April 28th, 2022. I had a notification that came on my journal entry yesterday from 3 years ago. To the day, on the 27th of April, 2019, I had made mention of a writing by Sparks called The Trial of Faith. And as I briefly looked through it yesterday, I just couldn't believe how remarkably timed it was for today. So I've woken up this morning at 4 a.m. I spoke to Lisa to say goodnight to her. And by the time I got off the call, I felt the sadness come in of the fact that we had all prayed yesterday for something to happen on the one-year anniversary since I asked Lisa to marry me, and it didn't. So I woke up with those kind of, you know, brain chemicals and negativity. So I've gotten up this morning not feeling very well. Unlike yesterday, I felt very well physically. This morning, I've woken up feeling a bit out of it, foggy, lethargic a bit. Not sure why. But I want to capture this journal entry because I think it's so important, and I think I'm going through a tremendous trial of faith. Obviously, this whole life of mine is a tremendous trial of faith. I've just stumbled upon another teaching of Sparks about I will be your sign from Ezekiel, and I feel very much that the Lord has chosen to do this in my life, and as a result, these people suffer far more than normal Christians. And that explains a lot of what's going on in my life. Not that I'm better than anyone, but that God chooses to take me deeper, just as he would any person who would be willing to do this. And then you suffer so that God can make a sign to the angels, both from heaven and hell, and to make a spectacle to the universe and people around. So I believe it. It's the only real explanation for why my life doesn't look like other people's lives. And so today, I feel that I'm suffering in my flesh. You know, it's the date has come and gone and nothing has happened again. It's the 21st date and nothing happened. So it really looks like a complete failure. It looks like an abandonment of God, or, you know, has God, like Lisa said, gone to sleep, gone on vacation, forgotten about us? And of course, in our spirits, we know this is not true. But in your natural self, you're having to battle against this. It's a battle against unbelief. And Satan always comes to help. And I've been dealing with this for years, and my journal recordings, I've got hundreds of times I've talked about this, but it never gets easier because the trials get more difficult. The testing of the faith gets harder. If you've been through one test, the tests just get greater. So in this reading, he speaks about Jeremiah, and he has you read Jeremiah 32, which I'm not going to read it in its entirety. I'll just explain that it's the time where, because of King Zedekiah not liking the word of warning that Babylon is coming to besiege you and take over you and you will be imprisoned, he himself has put Jeremiah in prison. And the word of the Lord comes to Jeremiah while Babylon is besieging Jerusalem. And Jeremiah is held captive inside of Jerusalem, which is being held captive. The word of the Lord comes to him and says, your cousin's going to come to you and say, buy my field. And then his cousin, lo and behold, shows up. He says, I knew this was the word of the Lord. I buy the field and I'm told to put it away in a safe way in a clay pot so that the document lasts a long time. And then you have this promise from God that houses and fields and vineyards will again be bought in this land that's under siege by this great army. It just is a complete contradiction of what the reality is. So then he has this prayer, and he says, "Ah, sovereign Lord, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power and outstretched arm. Nothing is too hard for you. You show your love to thousands, but bring the punishment for the children's sins into the laps of their children after them. Oh, great and powerful God, whose name is the Lord Almighty, great are your purposes and mighty are your deeds. Your eyes are open to all the ways of men. You reward everyone according to his conduct and his deeds deserve. You performed miraculous signs and wonders in Egypt." And so now Sparks is going to point out in this teaching that he begins to reflect on all that God did for Egypt, and for that matter, all that he's done before mankind, as a way of remembering to bolster his faith. And he's saying that Jeremiah is not praying this like he's some confident man of faith and has no doubts. No, he is saying this because he's fighting to keep his faith in the face of doubts because of the extreme contradictions of the circumstances and this thing that God has asked him to do that completely contradicts everything he sees with his eyes, to buy this land. It doesn't make any sense. So he goes on to say, "You performed miraculous signs and wonders in Egypt and have continued them to this day, both in Israel and among all mankind, and you have gained the renown that is still yours. You brought your people Israel out of Egypt with signs and wonders by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm and with great terror. You gave them this land you had sworn to give their forefathers, a land flowing with milk and honey. They came in and took possession of it, but they did not obey you or follow your law. They did not do what you commanded them to do, so you brought all this disaster upon them. See how the siege ramps are built up to take the city. Because of the sword, famine, and plague, the city will be handed over to the Babylonians who are attacking it. What you said has happened, as you now see." And then he says this key verse, "And though the city will be handed over to the Babylonians, you, O sovereign Lord, say to me, buy the field with silver and have the transaction witnessed." So the Lord knew his heart in this prayer. He knew what place he was coming from. Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, "I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?" So it's this idea of God bringing him back to question him on the very statement he made in verse 17, "Nothing is too hard for you." And here it is 10 verses later, God's having to say, Jeremiah, because it's a complete contradiction. So I have this excerpt written in my journal entry. And it says, then he says, "I prayed." His declaration is not the declaration of a heart that is without questions, doubts, or fears. It all comes over him in this terrible conflict, and his own doubts, misgivings, fears, heart unbelief makes this cry, "Oh Lord, there is nothing too hard for thee." That is not the confident, bold statement of a man who is absolutely sure of that. It is a man who is trying to save his own faith in the hour of reaction, a man who is struggling with all that it is to be seen, which so positively denies the position that he has taken, meaning to buy the field. A man who is in the throes of a terrible battle between everything on the outside, which says, impossible, it can never be. You have made an awful mistake. You have taken the wrong course. You have given everything away. Now, at the time I'm getting this devotion yesterday, I have made this note 3 years ago to the day of yesterday, the 1 year anniversary of the day that I asked Lisa to marry me. And at this point, I've given her my house, all of my, basically my monthly income goes to her, and also all of my possessions. Literally, the only thing I have left is my suitcase, a carry-on. That's it, and a laptop. So it sometimes feels to me this doubt of, oh, you've made a mistake. It's, you can see how this relates to me. It's impossible. You've taken the wrong course. You've gotten ahead of God. Now, very rarely, but this thought has come to me. You know, the thought has come to me. Not like it comes from me. It comes from outside of me. You know, oh, you're going to end up. And it's very rare. Honestly, at this point, it's very rare that that would happen. But I can conceive of how this, you know, has come about in this writing. And that the N-word, other life, which knows that God has said something at one time. So it's this conflict between the part of him that knows, wow, this could be terrible, everything could have gone wrong, the natural part, and then the part of you that knows God has said something at one time. He had a leading from the Lord, so did I. Send your bags, send your house. And then the Lord bore witness to it, confirmed it, so did I. He sent money, $44,000. He answered our prayers. He got the house there. He found a place for it to sit. He knows the Lord in his deepest heart, as do I. There is a realm deep down in him where he is sure. But today, just at this moment of terrible reaction, when he has been making this public declaration, and have I, God has had me tell the whole story, the grace to love again publicly, and it all comes back on him when he is alone and Satan assails him. Was I right? Have I made a mistake? A battle. Everything is saying, no, you are wrong. And the circumstances are screaming to me, I'm wrong. God is doing this for a reason. It's 8:04 right now as I'm saying that. So here we have a situation where not even my bags can be released from customs. No matter what we're trying to do, they're stuck. 25 days my bags have been sitting in customs today. How can you explain that? This is a service that you're supposed to be able to use to send your bags ahead so that while you're on vacation, you're not having to travel with your bags to and from the airport and the hotel, and they get right to your destination. My bags have been sitting in customs for 25 days. We cannot get hardly any communication whatsoever. It's an absolute debacle. You can only explain this because this is Michael Criswell having done this. And I moved forward with the Lord to do it. And because New Zealand is so severely restrict right now, they've become so strict. And so we're waiting. We've provided them all the information, and we hear nothing. This is clearly the Lord's doing. And I've said as much. I'm a little frustrated this morning because I'm not feeling well physically. I also know that I'm suffering the fact that, you know, here it is. I prayed for God to do something and nothing happened. So it's a severe, severe test of faith, and everything is being held back. I just want to point out again, everything. My bags are being held back. My finances are being held back. My book sales are being held back. My love relationship with my wife, talking about the part that would keep us excited and keep us pain relief, that's being held back. My work is being held back. The Lord doesn't seem to be allowing me to do anything. It's a total deprivation of everything. And you're fighting to survive with nothing to make you feel good whatsoever. I can't even go do work. Work would make me feel good. It seems even that's being held back. And so I'm having this terrible suffering. It's a total deprivation of everything. I'm stuck for 9 months plus now. I've been stuck in Tyler's house. I have no car. I you know, walk back and forth. I've done hundreds of miles walking back and forth like a caged animal inside this house for 9 months. And now everything I have is gone. I sold my car. I shipped my house. I've sent every single one of my belongings. And so I'm staying stuck. And it's very, very frustrating in moments like this. And yet I know I must endure. This is a trial of faith. This is the test of faith where your nature is screaming, wake up, God. You know, like Lisa said, did you go on vacation? Wake up. Remember, you gave us this promise. This is all intentional. And this is to be an example to other people where when I'm in New Zealand, this recording is going to be one of the most important. Because right now it looks like I'm a complete idiot. Tyler has come down this morning, and he's got 6 days coming up between May 11th and May 16th where he's got paid time off, and he's wanting to know if I want to do something, maybe want to go to Florida. And I said, son, I can't go to Florida. I don't have any money. I can't. Not only that, I said, but I have to wait. I mean, I'm stuck. What if God calls me to go? And I said, you know, so I can't even tell my son whether or not I can go on a vacation with him because I'm stuck. That's how stuck I am. I can't do anything. And I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it more right now than I have in months. You know, I've had no prayer today yet either. I've not been to the trail. I don't even feel like it. I don't feel good physically at all today. So he goes on and says, you know, it is true, beloved, is it not? That so often there are these things about which we had absolutely no doubt in the hour when the Lord spoke to us, and wonderful confirmations and witnesses that the Lord has given. But then comes the time of trial when we question. We are in the bitter conflict with the greatest certainties in our history. So these are the greatest certainties. Lisa's your wife. Send the tiny house. Send the possessions. And now I'm in bitter conflict. I've sent everything I had and I'm still stuck. It's absolute, should be a textbook. I mean, I've read about these kind of things and it's like it's happening to me textbook. That doesn't mean I'm free of the pain of it. It doesn't mean I'm free of the suffering of it. This is suffering. It's been below the surface for a while. And yesterday, last night, I had to end the call with Lisa sooner rather than later because I could feel the suffering come to the surface. And I've been pushing it down and pushing it down by the power of the Spirit. And this morning, even thinking about it, I'm in angst. You know, and then Tyler coming down and asking me, that just even added to my frustration because I know I'm stuck. I can't tell my son, you know, I'd love to go with him to Florida. And I can't tell him whether or not I can. First of all, I can't even conceive of spending the money to do something like that right now. And then secondly, most importantly, I don't know if I'm going to be any day taken, any day a door opened. And that's really frustrating. Being imprisoned for this long, you know, it's a long time of hoping for something, waiting for something, and nothing happens. And your circumstances have just become less and less. I now have nothing. I don't even have any decent summer clothes to wear. You know, I've sent it all ahead. Well, Jeremiah has this reaction, and he fights it by first of all making his affirmation. There is nothing too hard for thee. Then he seeks to strengthen that position of faith in the Lord by going over all the wonderful things that the Lord has done for his people from Egypt onwards. No, from the creation onwards, the mighty works of God. He is supporting himself by bringing up divine history to his rescue in the hour of conflict for faith, just as I have done with Lisa. The tiny house made it. My bags are going to make it. But you can see even the bags have become incredibly discouraging. It looks like, see, you've made another mistake. It wasn't God who told you to send the bags. And then what do? I look back and I go, oh, no, yes, it was. 7 months and 7 days, exactly like Brother Jan. Yes, it was the Lord who told me to send those bags on. It doesn't look like it. It looks like the New Zealand Customs has more power than God. He allows this to be the case. This is how it tests our faith. This is why we just barely get by as servants of the Lord and as Christians. Much more if you're a servant of the Lord, you're just barely going to get by. It's amazing if you look at the servants of the Lord. We would think, oh, they're so big and powerful and great and God is so awesome in their life. You know what? They just barely get by. They just barely get by. That's what it means to be a significant servant of the Lord. You are going to suffer. You're just barely going to get by. You can't name a single servant who didn't just barely get by, with the exception of, you know, maybe like Joseph, because he's a type of Jesus. He reigns so big in the end. But look at how he just barely got by from the whole time. Moses just barely gets by. He doesn't even get into the promised land. David ends up in a shameful life situation with him. You know, he's saying things that are shameful on his deathbed that he shouldn't be saying, and the terrible mistakes that he goes through. And you got Jeremiah. He's basically a complete failure as a prophet, and God kind of hints around as much about it. Nobody listens to his messages. You know, same thing with Ezekiel. He's in exile and with the people, has lost everything. And it's just, you know, you just barely get by. And the prophet is a sign to the people, and it's painful. It's very painful. He writes, "Now, why have I said all that? Not just to justify a situation like that, though it may be comforting to us all to find that even a Jeremiah has been the way that we have gone and are going. What is faith? A man who has never had a doubt does not know what faith is. A man who has never had a fight with unbelief does not know anything about faith. I've been fighting with unbelief since 2009 now. A man who has no positive beliefs knows nothing whatever about true faith. Faith is always a militant thing in the Word of God, and that's what I'm doing today. It's why it sounds like I do. It's a fight. I'm militant. It's Matthew 11:12, taking the kingdom of God by force. He says, that is why you have got to take the shield of faith, and that is the big shield of faith over all. It is always militant. How is it militant? Because of these fiery darts, these wiles of the devil. You know, when I look at the dreams that Lisa and I are having, it's like there's no escape from it. You know, more and more, I am coming out of being naive, my little positive attitude self that I've had all these years. More and more, I am becoming cynical towards the idea of being a Christian means blessings here. It really does not. It really does not. I'm seeing more and more that if you're a true Christian, you are truly just going to barely get by. I have understood recently the 40 years that Israel spent in the wilderness to be more even of a picture of the 40 some odd years the average Christian will spend in the wilderness here. The mixture, as one writer puts it, of the howlings with the shouts of joy. That it's days like today, it's experiences like this where you realize once again that this is all to be a wilderness, that our true promised land is only heaven. There is no real promised land here. There are hints, there are tokens, there are pictures, there are pledges, there are little Beulah lands, there are little basically oases in the wilderness, little places where you can stop and get refreshed, and then it's back to the travails amongst the scorpions and snakes and desert heat. I really see that. I've been having this come up more and more in my journal recordings in this past year, this realization that we truly do have to fix our mind and hearts on things above. And it's like sometimes I'm losing sight of this in the fight for this promise, in the delight of being with my wife is so beautiful and the desire for it is so strong and God has made it so good that I look to it, even reading last night, the marriage altar, about the escape that God has created inside of marriage, the shelter, a lagoon, a harbor, a safe harbor from the world's evils. And I look at that and I long for that so much because I have battled so much and I'm hoping so much that I have some sort of a Job-type experience where God says, okay, this guy has suffered enough. You know, like Jeremiah, he was released and given his freedom. He suffered so much for 40 years, and I look at my life and I've got 40 years, 41 years. I'm exactly in the amount of suffering that Jeremiah has had. 41 years, I'm 48. I've only had 7 years of peace in my entire life. I've suffered for 40 years, 41 years. So I'm looking at this and there's a part of me that just hopes, God, are you going to give me a rest from this? Are you going to allow me to have a little bit of rest? And I'm hoping in that. And then as these trials continue, I say to myself, no, I need to settle in. This is never going to end. And sometimes I feel there's no escape. Sometimes I feel overwhelmed. And right now I'm feeling it. Sometimes I say, I don't want to have a teenager to raise. I don't want to have to deal with the weaknesses of this. I don't want to have to move to New Zealand and start over and live there perhaps, I don't know, without a visa. I don't know what, I don't want to be an illegal immigrant. I don't want to have to deal with relatives who are not interested in me being in my life. And I have these feelings where I just say, forget it. And you just want to bail on it all and just say, forget it. It's just easier to just, you know, just Lisa, I love you. So amazed by, you know, what we have, this is just too tough. It's just too hard. And you want to just say, just give up on it. Just move on with your life. I'll move on with my life. I'll be a failure. I'll lose the ministry. And you get to this point where you just say, you just don't even care. It's 8:18 right now as I'm saying this. I consider our present sufferings are not worth comparing to the glory that will be revealed in us. And you literally have a part of you in your nature where your nature just wants to give up. And Satan is right there going, yeah, you're an idiot. It'll be so much easier if you just act dead like all the rest of the condemned fish around you going downstream. Quit trying so hard. Quit trying to be a Christian and follow. What are you getting for your rewards of entering in on this narrow path? You get nothing but suffering. And the worst of it is you get these hopes that then turn to suffering after suffering after suffering after suffering after suffering. 41 years of suffering. 41 years of fighting the fight of faith and of pushing up the cliff, and then the ball just rolls right back over your head and you're nothing but a greasy spot on the side of the trail. If you look at my life, it's horrible. My life is horrible. Who would want my life? You're not going to look at my life and say, oh, I've suffered as much as Michael. No, you haven't. I can't even make it out of the hospital without tripping down the steps and having my dad stick his head through the glass and there's blood everywhere. And I mean, I'm having one of these moments where it's like, you cannot escape my life. I'm in bondage. I'm in prison. You cannot escape it. I can't escape persecution. I can't escape being misunderstood. I can't escape losing every family member I have. I can't escape losing 4 of the 5 children, 2 of my 3 spouses. Being on television in front of hundreds of thousands of people, being made out to be an idiot. My life is just, and so now I'm having one of those moments. I don't have these moments often. I've had this happen twice since I've been in this relationship with Lisa, where I felt terribly sorry for myself. And I can feel it. It's not as bad now as it was that time, but when you look at it from the eyes of nature, my life is a throwaway life. It makes less than no sense. It's ridiculous to live my life where you sign up for what? To suffer, to suffer, to suffer, to suffer, to suffer, to suffer, to suffer. 41 years of suffering? And for what? Because you are unequally yoked, or because you're, doing drugs, or because you're watching pornography, or because you're eating too much food, or because you're turning exercise into idolatry, or because you're wanting to be famous, or because you lied and cheated on your taxes, or because you're holding unforgiveness towards other people, or because you're living in lust, or because you're, living in jealousy. No, none of those things, because you're trying to obey God and do His will. And then you just get clobbered and clobbered and clobbered. The only people in the whole world I can identify with are the prophets who are thrown into prison, thrown into the mire, sunk into the mud, holed up into a cage, mocked, ridiculed. People want to kill them, stone them, all this stuff. These are the only people that I can identify with. Ezekiel made out to be an idiot. Why? For your sin? No, for the sins of other people. It gets so bad, you end up being like Jeremiah, looking at God and say, will you be a deceptive brook to me? Well, you have deceived me. Oh, how mysterious, how painful are God's ways. There is no way I would have signed up for this if I would have known what I was going to get into. There's no way. If God could have allowed me to see what I was going to go through, and now I look, the ministry is being held back. Everything is being held back. And there is, it seems like there's no purpose for my existence right now. None. It seems like all that I was useful for is gone and done. And no matter how much I've showed people of what God has done, the mockers and their comments outweigh the people who claim to have spiritual eyes to see what God's doing. The persecution never ends. The blind people never stop coming. The pain and suffering. I mean, this is an extraordinary experience. It never ends, and it makes you want to become cynical, and it makes you want to become angry against God. And here's the thing. No matter how hard I would try to justify myself before God, no matter how hard I want to show how God is being cruel to me or this is a horrible existence that I'm having, I cannot do it. Deep inside of me, I know the truth more than I know the feelings of the flesh. I know that God is faithful. I know that my God loves me. I know that this is all going to make sense one day. I know that God is doing something beautiful. I know that this is what it means to be a servant to the Lord. I know that I have been chosen to suffer, and I know that one day this will all be justified. But man, I tell you, there's times when I say, that's it, I want out. I want out of this cage. I'm sick and tired of suffering so that other people who are doing such disobedient things to God, I'm sick and tired of trying to plead with people to take their relationship with God seriously, and it constantly causes me suffering. I'm suffering right now because of a family member's sin and because I had to confront them. And then I suffer, not because of my sin, but because of their sin. Many people, the truth is, I'm just giving a recent example, but you feel trapped. And so there's nothing to do but to bring the spirit low, which is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to finish this reading, and then I'm probably going to just go walk very lowly before the Lord. The only way out is to acquiesce. The only way to peace is to give in and to bring the spirit down and humble yourself and hit the down arrow key on your spirit, because God has brought the circumstances down, and there's no escape unless I want to quit. I could easily free myself from this bondage. I could tell Lisa, you can keep the tiny house. I love you more than I've ever loved anybody. I'm so thankful for you. You can keep all my belongings, sell them, make good, and I'll continue to send you money and provide for you until, you know, you can get back on your own feet and you sell the tiny house. That'll give you money to live for a while, and I'm going to just disappear. I'm going to shut the ministry down. I'm going to go across the street and apply for a job at Home Depot and just, you know, work there and have a little peaceful life and pay my bills and start paying Tyler some rent and live here with him in this condo and do like what everybody else does. Take a vacation every 6 months or a year and go on fun trips on the weekends and try to find some new hobby to throw myself into, maybe get more into working out or whatever, and just throw myself into a normal life and just say, see you later too. I'll still read my Bible every day and just end the suffering. I could end it that way. I could also end the suffering by saying, I want Lisa to come here. We can't do this anymore. I just need you to come here. Or take the money that was offered to me by a friend, pay off the passport and start going the normal way and end my suffering and get out of this jail. I could do that. That would be a less dramatic way of ending the suffering. I'm not going to do any of these things. I love God way too much. I've come way too far to give up now. To whom else will I go? God has the words that lead to eternal life. He has done so many good things for me. He's led me to so many oases. And I'm in bondage to God more than I am to the flesh. That's the point that I want to make, is that I'm in prison because, not because I don't have a choice. No Christian is in bondage to the Lord because they don't have a choice. You can free to go at any time. For after this time, many of Jesus' disciples turned away and no longer followed him. John 6:66. Anybody can turn away at any time from Jesus. If you remain in bondage to him, you're going to suffer. You're going to suffer what it means to do his will, taking up your cross and denying yourself. That is going to be suffering, and you're going to catch a breath a few times, but you're going to suffer all the way to the end. Our lifting up is in the life to come, not in this life. We'll have some temporary liftings. But I love God too much, and I certainly love Lisa too much. I can't give up on Lisa. The truth of the matter is that I would rather have a long-distance relationship with Lisa until the end of my life and never have the opportunity to hug her, kiss her, consummate the marriage, walk with her down the trail, go to the grocery store with her, you know, cook meals with her. I would rather have it the way it is now than to not have it at all, and it would be a suffering in and of itself. 8:28 right now. But I would rather have that. I love her so much. She's my best friend, and I've never been loved like I am by Lisa. I've never seen a person persevere and suffer for me like she has, and I've never loved anybody like I've loved Lisa. So I by my love, I am in bondage. I cannot escape the prison because of my love for God. I cannot escape my bondage and my relationship to Lisa and my hope for her because of my love for her. It is love that keeps me in bondage to this. It's love that's causing me to persevere. And many waters cannot quench love, and that means many waters from Satan. But my nature screams for pain relief. End this. Quit being so, looking so humbled. Get out of this. This situation is humiliating. My whole life for the last so many years has been humiliating. So he goes on to say about how faith has to be a militant thing. And it's because of these fiery darts, these wiles of the devil. You see, when you have taken the position by revelation from God, that is going to precipitate you into the deepest conflicts with unbelief of your own heart, reinforced by satanic onslaught. That's exactly what I'm describing in this journal entry. Deepest conflicts against my own nature, wanting pain relief. This is all about pain relief. If you're in jail of any kind, you want out, and it's your nature that wants out. It's painful, and I'm in a prison. It's not the prison of steel bars. It's the prison of spiritual bars. And what's worse is that you could get out of these. Just like you could escape if you schemed enough, you could escape a real prison. Many people have. But I could escape out of this prison. That makes it even worse because you choose not to. It's the taking up of the cross, the denying yourself that is excruciatingly painful. You're abandoning yourself. You are betraying your own self. It's really what it is that to be a Christian is to betray yourself. Your nature that says, let's find things that are easy, things that are comfortable, things that bring us happiness, things that avoid trouble, things that avoid risk, things that keep us in freedom. And so when you become a Christian, you are betraying yourself. It's a daily betrayal, the denial of self. And you're betraying yourself because you're following Jesus. You're loyal to Jesus, and your loyalty to him is a betrayal of yourself, your nature. So here he says, the deepest conflicts with the unbelief of your own heart, reinforced by satanic onslaught, and you will need to call up every reserve to maintain that position before God. Faith is never passive. Hence all my recordings, hence all the prayer, hence all the readings, hence all the fighting. The reading of this teaching I had written back 3 years ago by Austin Sparks was remarkable timing because this was happening at a time when Persis was so far gone, I'm considering her as dead. I say the wife I married no longer exists. She is barely a shell of what she once was. I cannot even recognize her from the woman I married. This was a severe test of my faith at that time. So he continues here, God's contradiction of the impossible. Well, now let us look at this thing and see what it really says to us. I think it says in the first place that the Lord here, by leading his servant to do this thing, which is to buy the field, is definitely contradicting the strongest adverse conditions. So you see, he led me to send the tiny house over and to send my belongings over. And this so completely contradicts I don't have a passport. I can't pay the child support. God has told me not to pay the child support now. And then there is no open border in New Zealand. This completely contradicted what he asked me to do. Conditions are such and such. The position is this and that. It is a very desperate situation, and the word may well be used, impossible. The question may be raised as to whether it is possible, too hard, language rightly used in connection with this situation. But the Lord's leading in this matter is the Lord's own contradiction of the most adverse conditions, the most impossible situations. If Jeremiah read rightly into the leading of the Lord and carried that reading through his experience, he would see that the very leading of the Lord was a contradiction of the circumstances. So with me, the passport, the no visa, the no MIQ, the closed border, can't get out of America, can't get into New Zealand, all of that, those are circumstances. And then God comes along, just like with Jeremiah, and he asks me to take a position, and he leads me to do something that completely contradicts those circumstances. Send the tiny house. Send all your bags. That is, he would have to say, the Lord led me to do that, to buy that field. Therefore, the Lord means something in that. The situation is so-and-so, but by what the Lord has led me to do, he contradicts the situation. The situation says impossible, but God, his very leading, has denied that. So this is where I have always come back on the fact that it's not impossible for God to get me into New Zealand. He sent the tiny house, and that was a miracle. That had obstacles. That was, quote, impossible, and yet there it sits. The position that he has led us to take is his denial that it is ultimately impossible of realization. In other words, he led me to send the tiny house to show it is impossible for me to not actually get there and realize the promise of being there and marrying my wife one day. He says, whatever the circumstances may be, and you have faith. Faith is just that in essence, that it holds to the leading of the Lord in spite of impossible conditions which subsequently develop. And so here I am a year later to the day. Nothing has moved forward to help me get there, but yet the house is there and my bags are there, yet they haven't been released from prison yet. He says, I do not say I have got that faith. I don't suppose you have. But that is what is here, and perhaps we have got to try and support our poor faith as Jeremiah did. The Lord is seeking to try and strengthen our faith in a day when outwardly we would say, too hard, impossible. As Lisa would say, the too hard basket. Is that what the Lord says? Is there anything too hard for me? He might well come back on Jeremiah's, there is nothing too hard for thee. Is there anything too hard for me? It is not out of place for the Lord to say that after the declaration. Well, the Lord contradicts by the buying of this field in those conditions which seem to shout so loudly that nothing more is possible. Then Jeremiah believes God and acts according to his faith. His faith is resolved into obedience, and his obedience is a business-like obedience, not a slack, slothful obedience, but as we have pointed out, a very thorough transaction. That is the obedience of faith for which the Lord looks, and that is exactly what I did. I spent $55,000 in a situation that was absolutely impossible for me to get to New Zealand, and I sent my home, the most valuable thing on this earth I have, the thing I enjoy the most, the thing the Lord gave to me to live and support myself and Tyler and to live in, and now it is gone. I sent it over to a place that I cannot even get into. That is absolutely ridiculous. What does that mean to us? Well, if we have had reason to believe that the Lord has led at some time to take a certain course, do certain things, things which correspond to the buying of that field, which for me is the tiny house and all of my possessions, and situations subsequently arise, which seemed to prove all that to have been a great mistake, all wrong, not after all in the will of God. The obedience of faith will call upon us to strengthen our attitude in that matter and hold on to that, whatever it is, in a new way against the conditions which arise. Not, oh, well, we shall wait and see, being slack about it, yielding rather to the pressure of conditions, letting go, taking an attitude, well, if it was of the Lord, of course it would come through. I don't see how it's going to be, and so on. Or really, with both hands, in a double attestation with two documents over against the circumstances, affirming this thing has got to be, if God is true, it must be, it shall eventuate. The obedience of faith is positive. We are in a day like Jeremiah's in many respects, and this is one of the things I feel that faith demands, that we shall come down on both feet and with a double document and stand firmly there upon the ground which we know in our heart of hearts, deeper down than all the circumstances and all the doubt, is the ground which God gave us, the field which the Lord led us to take, costly as it has been, and the weighing out of it in the balances is a very real part of this obedience of faith. It is a costly procedure. What I'm feeling and going through and experiencing is incredibly costly. It's cost me well over $200,000 now between the value of the house, the belongings I've sent over, all the belongings I had in the tiny house, the money that was spent to get it there. It's a very, very costly procedure, and I have nothing to show for it. The circumstances have gotten even more contradictory that there's any chance of me getting there when God said to me, stop paying the child support. If I hadn't heard from the Lord, I could not only not get to New Zealand, I could end up in jail. So here it is. It's just remarkable how things have completely contradicted. And I'm now having to fight such a strong, fierce battle. Here it is again. It's all coming to a surface on this 1 year to the day. So he finally says, I do not believe that a vessel really comes to its full service, meaning a servant to the Lord, until faith has suffered every kind of shaking and been established. There may be usefulness in measure with very weak faith, but full measure of usefulness to the Lord comes when faith has been established through much shaking and much suffering. Yes, that is the way of every vessel of the Lord. It has been thrown into this awful conflict over faith, and then its main usefulness has come out. That is another subject, but you can think about it. And I would say awful conflict is absolutely a perfect way to describe. Moses had a certain amount of faith when he struck out in Egypt. But 40 years later, he is a very disciplined man and can be of very much more use to the Lord. But what a 40 years of inaction for a man like Moses. If that is not enough to test a man's faith, and all that he has gone through after his devotion to the Lord in Egypt, Paul's full usefulness to the Lord did not come until he went to Rome and was in prison. The church's enrichment has been 1,000-fold more by those last years of his life in prison, but what a test of faith, what a perfecting of faith after many years, and so it is that a vessel for its full usefulness has to know a deep work by which faith is established. The Lord give us grace to endure the establishing processes. And how I pray that that is exactly what God is doing with me and Lisa right now, that this is more and more about a further establishing and strengthening for an increased usefulness of our faith, because boy, I'm thankful that days like today and moments like what I've had this morning do not last long. And I know how this goes. I've said this for years. I'll never give up. I can't. It doesn't matter how difficult it gets. Whatever the difficulty is on the outside, there is always something more in me that is unwilling to give up. It's something so deep inside of me that knows I can never quit on God, that I'm willing to be obedient unto death. I mean, this is the obedience unto death. Paul says of their trip to Asia that they faced a sentence of death far beyond their ability to endure, such that they despaired of life. And he says that this happened that they might not rely on themselves, but on God who raises the dead. And I feel that I have felt that despair many a times. And no doubt it's a picture of what the body of Christ will go through in the end. You have to be willing to face terrible, terrible death. Terrible, terrible, terrible death. I mean, it is just horrible. And right now, it's 8:44 a.m. And that is not a coincidence. Neither is it that the playlist I'm listening to is 5 hours and 51 minutes. 8:44 is Psalm 66, 10 through 12. You tested us, O God. You refined us like silver. You brought us into prisons, and you laid burdens on our backs. You let men ride over our heads. You brought us through fire and through water. But then you brought us to a place of abundance. Man, such is the way of God. Such is the way of God. And in order that other people may get through, the servant of the Lord has to suffer. I think of Psalm 55:1, just like the length of this playlist, 5 hours and 51 minutes. I've been seeing 5:51 a lot lately, and now I know why. Listen to my prayer, O God. Do not ignore my plea. Hear me and answer me. My thoughts trouble me, and I am distraught at the voice of the enemy, at the stares of the wicked, for they bring down suffering upon me and revile me in their anger. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death assail me. Fear and trembling have beset me. Horror has overwhelmed me. I said, oh, that I had the wings of a dove. I would fly away and be at rest. I would flee far away and stay in the desert. I would hurry to my place of shelter, far from the tempest and storm. Oh, man. Verse 16. But I call to God and the Lord saves me. Evening, morning, and noon. I cry out in distress and he hears my voice. He ransoms me unharmed for the battle waged against me. Even though many oppose me, God, who is enthroned forever, will hear them and afflict them. Men who never change their ways and have no fear of God. Verse 22, cast your cares on the Lord, and he will sustain you. He will never let the righteous fall. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. And so you suffer for the glory of God. And now I will just bring my spirit very low and wait for the Lord to lift my head again. Praise his holy name. Praise his holy name.